International's Human Rights Report from the University of Arizona's chapter of Amnesty International. I'm Jesse Bangu. When we talk about globalization, many people think of large corporations, world trade, or international financial organizations, such as the World Bank. But it is hard not to think about anti-globalization efforts. The International Monetary Fund and the World Trade Organization are targets of protest wherever they meet around the world. To many economists, world trade sounds good in theory. So why does it generate such a strong negative public image? We will look at globalization and how it leads to human rights problems after a quick look at human rights news first. One of Mexico's leading human rights lawyers, Barbara Zamora, has received a threatening email message. Zamora is a close colleague of Digna Ochoa, who was killed last October. This email against Zamora stated, quote, "crashes, accidents, lawyers, emergencies," which is similar to those messages sent to Digna Ochoa a few years before her death. Barbara Zamora has also received threatening telephone calls. The most recent threats have been reported to the Federal District Attorney General's office, and the authorities have reportedly offered to provide her with a bodyguard. While the investigation into the cause of Digna Ochoa's death continues, Zamora, as well as other human rights defenders, have publicly criticized the authorities on their human rights record. During 2001, over 3,048 people were executed in 31 countries, more than twice the total of 1,457 executions recorded in 2000. China's national, quote, "strike hard" campaign caused this dramatic increase. Between April and July of 2001, the Chinese government executed 1,781 people, more than the total number of people executed in the rest of the world in the past 3 years combined. Many of the cases have been in clear violation of international standards of the death penalty. For example, Iran, Pakistan, and the USA executed 3 people for crimes committed while they were under the age of 18, in violation of international law. Amnesty International has called on the United Nations Commission on Human Rights to take strong measures against the death penalty and to establish a universal moratorium on executions. Over 5,265 people have been sentenced to death in 68 countries in 2001 overall. Amnesty International recorded 139 executions in Iran, 79 in Saudi Arabia, and 66 in the United States. China's executions comprised 90% of the worldwide total last year. 8 years ago, a new law permitted the United States to prosecute suspected torturers, but has not yet been used. In fact, the U.S. government recently admitted that as many as 1,000 suspected torturers may have fled to the U.S. to escape justice. In many cases, authorities have been given the identities of the suspects and the evidence against them, but have failed to prosecute any of the cases. Amnesty International released a new report criticizing U.S. inaction as a failure of political will and suggests the United States may become a sanctuary for human rights abusers. The report names 13 specific individuals who have entered the U.S. despite allegations that they committed torture and other human rights violations. Amnesty International suspects that at least 150 suspected torturers currently live in the United States. That's the human rights news for now. I'm Jesse Bangu. Basically, globalization includes increasing and expanding any connection between countries, but economic connections cause the most controversy. Globalization is becoming more linked with trade and international finance as large corporations gain influence in the global marketplace. Around the world, many people associate increased labor, environmental, and human rights problems with the rise of the multinational corporations and international financial institutions. Press coverage of anti-globalization protests focus on giant puppets or anarchists breaking windows, but barely mentions why people dislike international institutions such as the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Ironically, the IMF exists to foster economic growth, increase employment, and give temporary financial assistance to countries in need. So then, why do so many people complain about it? First, consider how the IMF has evolved since it first opened in 1946. At the initial conference in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, its Articles of Agreement set up 6 principles designed to promote financial and economic cooperation among member nations through expanded balanced growth and increased world trade. It also planned to maintain stable monetary exchange. This would lead to high employment levels and incomes. Each member country paid an initial subscription to build a pool of currency and gold. This new fund would grant temporary loans to troubled countries so they could pay off international debts without harming national or international prosperity. The Bretton Woods attendees wanted to develop a new economic order to govern the post-World War II economy, one in which one country could not competitively devalue another's currency. They decided on a system controlled by three organizations: the International Monetary Fund, or IMF, the World Bank, and the International Trade Organization, or ITO. The United States objected to the Trade Organization, and it was eventually replaced with the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, or GATT. This conference focused on trade as the major vehicle to increase worldwide prosperity. But before discussing world trade, let's continue with the IMF history. To achieve economic stability, the IMF allowed countries to join by paying an initial subscription. Each of these member countries would fix their currency to the value of the U.S. dollar, which in turn was set to the price of gold. This led to one problem in which foreign countries began to trade and store U.S. dollars directly while the U.S. ran a deficit externally. The second problem was that the demand for gold exceeded gold production. So, the U.S. currency no longer represented actual gold, leading to a liquidity problem. That is, the U.S. might not, on demand, have enough actual gold to exchange for its currency, as it was supposed to have. The IMF responded by changing its subscription policy to base a member country's quotas on its economic power. But even this system collapsed in 1971, and the U.S. went off the gold standard. This allowed floating currency exchange rates worldwide. Since then, IMF actions have focused on loans to and surveillance of developing nations. Critics, mostly in poor countries, have complained that the IMF serves the interests of its wealthy members, while the people they claim to help, the poorest citizens of the world, suffer. They have three major complaints: voting power, policy, and conditionality. First, voting power. Developing nations need the most aid, but they don't have as much influence in IMF decisions. This leads to the second problem: policies that favor the wealthy countries. The third is the largest source of IMF criticism: conditionality. Poor countries say that the loan conditions go beyond repayment assurance. The IMF requires countries to shift resources and reduce consumption, but they are often requesting the loan because they can't do this. Another related complaint is that the IMF uses a standard recommendation for all countries, regardless of their individual circumstances. The ex-chief economist of the World Bank, Nobel laureate Joseph Stiglitz, confirmed this in an interview last year with Jubilee Plus. He said that despite the IMF's in-country investigation, they give each country's finance minister the same harsh four-step program. The plan seems designed to encourage free trade. Stiglitz compares this forced entry into foreign markets with the opium wars of the 19th century. The plan also fosters internal discontent, and the IMF riot has become an expected step that poor countries must eventually face when they receive the loan. Legendary IMF conditions include closing schools and hospitals or halting credit to farmers, forcing them to close farms and move to overcrowded cities. The environment is not spared either. The IMF has been known to require sale of natural resources, which has led to such problems as deforestation. Then, as Stiglitz explains, with the economy suffering and wages falling, the IMF deals a final blow, cutting subsidies to the poor and raising prices of such commodities as gas and water. In Bolivia, Ecuador, Argentina, and Indonesia, the resulting public unrest was inevitable and even predicted by internal World Bank documents. Given all these problems, countries avoid going to the fund except as a last resort. Unfortunately, they are trapped, as all creditor nations require IMF approval before granting debt relief, and the alternative, commercial lenders, require IMF's approval often before granting credit. Beyond these main concerns, there are several other problems, such as transparency and accountability. The International Monetary Fund makes its decisions in secret, so we can't tell whether they're motivated by economic factors or under pressure from powerful nations who are promoting their own interests. Even with increased public dissent over their decision, the IMF and World Bank have not addressed these concerns. Finally, in 2000, Joseph Stiglitz was terminated from his position as special advisor to the World Bank president, James D. Wolfensohn. He was most likely removed for criticizing IMF actions and trying to open the global economic policymaking process. Also, this may have been a warning to others who are promoting transparency among financial global institutions. The Assistant Director of the International Monetary Fund's Geneva office, Grant B. Taplin, has denied any responsibility for human rights in IMF decisions. According to Pakistan newspaper Dawn, Taplin stressed that the IMF is not, quote, bound by various human rights declarations and conventions. He made this comment while addressing a session of the United Nations Subcommission for the Promotion and Protection of Human Rights in August 2001. This discussion arose from a study indicating that the international financial institutions do not take human rights into account. Norway's expert on the United Nations Subcommission, Asbjørn Eide, countered that the institution is bound by human rights law. Mexico's Alonso Gomez Robledo said that the IMF, as well as the World Bank and WTO, lack international accountability. 26 independent experts serve on the subcommission, most of whom were critical of the IMF's stance on human rights. The assistant director of the European Office of the IMF, Sergio Pereira Leite, responded in an article for the September 4, 2001 issue of Le Monde. He described how IMF policies address human rights, focusing on poverty reduction, and stating that the fund should be open to outside criticism. We have looked at the IMF, but haven't even mentioned the WTO or how world trade affects people's rights. Not surprisingly, it turns out that the IMF and free trade agreements come from the same place. We will examine world trade and human rights in the second part of this report. Amnesty International is an independent human rights organization working for fair trials, ending torture, abolishing the death penalty, and freeing those who have been in prison solely for their beliefs. This has been the Human Rights Report produced by the University of Arizona's chapter of Amnesty International. I'm Jesse Bangu.
This is Sting. Susan.